And two out, two on, no score in the third. Here's Ahmed Rosario.
First pitch up the middle, and this could be business with Palacios rounding third. He'll score easily. Rosario knocks in the first run of the day. It's 1-0 Cleveland.
And one run would be more than enough for the Cleveland Guardians, used to be called the Cleveland Indians, if you're just catching up with Major League Baseball, as the Royals get shut out yesterday by a final of 4-0. They get swept by the Cleveland Guardians. The Guardians don't even have a winning record. The Royals give up a run in the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth innings against Cy Young. Oh, no, wait a minute. It wasn't Cy Young. Clayton Kershaw? No. How about Shane Bieber? He's a pretty good pitcher for Cleveland. No, Connor Pilkington. Everybody knows him. He's a household name.
Oh, yeah, the Pilkington.
The Pilker.
The Pilky guy.
The Pink guy. Or whatever his name is. Anyway, Connor Pilkington held the Royals scoreless through five innings. The Royals didn't even have an extra base hit. Seven singles, no runs, left nine runners on base, and they get shut out. Royals have lost four in a row, 11 of the last 13. They are now 16-34 in the season, worst record in baseball. They have today off, thank God, and they will start a three-game home series with the first-place Houston Astros tomorrow. And here's my question. If you can't beat the average to below average teams within your own division, what's going to happen when you play teams like the Astros?
In theory, nothing good, right?
Probably sweep them.
Yeah, they probably will, though. That's the thing. It's like you say that, and in theory, it shouldn't be good. But for some reason, sometimes when the Royals are bad, they tend to beat the good teams.
Because the good teams, I think, take them pretty lightly.
Relax, yeah.
Looking at the Royals' schedule, they have three with the Astros. The Astros right now are 33-18, the second best team in the American League. They lead the AL West. All right. Then the Royals have three against Toronto. Now, these are all home games, by the way. So it's awesome that the hometown faithful can watch some good baseball. It just won't be the Royals. The Astros, Blue Jays come to town for three. The Blue Jays are 29-20. And in second place behind the Yankees, they're off to a really good start. Then the Royals play the Orioles, who they lost them recently, so that's no gimme. The Orioles are last place in the AL East, so there's a chance, right? Then they go to the Giants for three. The Giants, all they are 5 over .500, a winning team. Then they go to the A's, and the A's have actually struggled this year. There's nobody to watch them, for crying out loud, to go to the games. They got three against the A's, then three against the Angels. The Angels have a winning record, 27-23. And then they get the A's and the Rangers at home. And that's when you go, wow, there we go. There's our six-game winning streak right at the end of June. We'll start to hit our peak. Salvador Perez says, I'm confident still on the team. Of course you're going to say that. Why wouldn't you? I mean, you have to. They're a 2-7 road trip, 9-20 in May. And they start out June rocking and soaring to new heights with no runs on seven singles. And Brad Keller was okay, six innings, four runs. And the Royals are on pace to have the worst record in team history. And that's saying something, because they've had some really bad teams in the past. And this is supposed to be a year where the Royals are turning it around. But not the case, and not yesterday. And now they get the first place Astros. And then the Blue Jays are 9 games over .500 in their next six games. It doesn't look like things are really going to turn around and be competitive.
No.
How can you be competitive in your division when you can't even beat the teams that are no good in your division? Like, you got swept by Cleveland. Cleveland was 19-24 coming in. All right, the White Sox. We saw them lose 3 out of 5 to the White Sox. White Sox are 2 games under .500. This division is probably the worst in baseball, and the Royals are 3.5 games out of 4th place in this division. That's how bad the Royals are. I mean, honestly, if the Royals had to play the Reds schedule, the Royals would probably be worse than 16-34. Or 16-33 is what it says here. 16-33 on the MLB.com. So 16-33. Beg your pardon. I give them one too many losses. Maybe we're foreshadowing.
Should be 34, though, I think. Weren't they 16-33. I wanted to give them an extra one.
Well, they might as well. What's the difference? 17, 18 under .500. Who really gives a flip anymore? But, you know, those Royals, wait till September. Here we come. Time for our Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
Brought to you by the Tribune Tower. If it's very high, I went to one of the towers that's on Michigan Avenue. I don't remember which one, though. and
long day, huh?
Long day, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so,
you go to a few of the Wrigley Field establishments nearby or something because you don't remember the tower height.
Well, I just remember it was really up there.
This scientific height adjustment brought to you by. Yeah. The towers. Right. We know they're tall.
I don't want to know.
How tall are they?
I don't want to know facts. I just want to see it for myself.
I believe it's 243,000 feet tall, Alex.
Give or take.
I'll take towers for 200, yeah. Alex.
But anyway, the Tribune Tower brings you this Cubs update, which is a 4-3 win over the Brewers in 10 innings.
Yay! I am happy for the Cubs. I mean, these Cubs updates have actually helped make me an honorary 21, Cubs fan.
21 and 29.
And they're not in last place?
Not in last place.
Thankfully, because of the Reds. Who scored 20 on the Cubs.
Well, yeah.
But that was just one bad
day. One bad day.
Cubs are only 10 games out of first.
Only.
That's actually not bad. Royals are 12.5 out of first. So there's always that to hang your hat on. Four of the five teams in AL Central have losing records. The only winning team in AL Central is the Twins. Whereas the Cubs are in division with Milwaukee at 32-20, and the Cardinals are 29-21. So there you have it. There's your Cubs update. Yankees update, we all hate them. All right, so moving on. By the way, Yankees won. What a shocker. Told you, we can keep doing this game. Every once in a while, the Cubs will win. Royals always lose. Yankees always win. Cubs occasionally win. Cubs are the X factor here. That's why we do a Cubs update, because they're interesting. They give up 20. They get swept in a doubleheader.
They score 20 every once in a while.
And then every once in a while, score 20. Yeah. And then they win a game, and they're like, really? They won? That's awesome. The Royals, it's just like, loss, 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 loss. Yankees, win, win. Judge hit a homer, win. Another homer. Bandbox, homer, homer. Okay. Local sports. Let's go to Dusty.
Yeah, we have an area graduate that is signed to play football at Dodge City Community College. Lakeside High School's Jay Schoen signed his letter of intent to play there in football in Dodge City. Schoen was one of the top 8-man football players in Kansas statistically this past season. First team All-State selection, 8-man Division II by multiple outlets. He had caught 47 passes for a career-high 1,088 yards, 15 touchdowns as a senior. Finished his career with 149 catches, 3,113 yards, and 44 touchdowns receiving. Had a great season on defense as well for Lakeside with 77 tackles and 8 for loss, 3 sacks and 2 interceptions. A first team all-league and all-district selection at tight end this past season as well. You can read more about Jay Schoen signing at Dodge City Community College at ncksports.com. You can also read about our Athletes of the Week. The members of the Southeast Saline Boys Track and Field Team have been named the Cunningham Telephone and Cable NCKSSports.com Athletes of the Week. Southeast Saline rolling to their second straight 3A Boys Championship this past weekend's Cache State Track and Field Championships in Wichita. The Trojans scored 94 points total. They won the team title by 44 points over second place Burlington. Dylan Sprecher and Chase Pogue were the ones that led the show there, scoring 50 points of the 94 on their own. Sprecher won individual state championships in the 800, 1600, and 3200. He set a new 3A state meet record time, 4:14.88 in the 1600. Also the only sub-2-minute 800 time there, and also finished with a great time in the 3200. The 800 and 1600 he won for the second straight year. And Chase Pogue also won the 110-meter hurdles and 300-meter hurdle titles for the second straight season, as he picked up a third-place finish in the 100-meter dash as well for the Trojans. Other state medalist Michael Murray in the 100 finished second, and third in the 200. Nakari Morikal-Palmer in the 400 finished second, and seventh in the 200. Levi Allen finished sixth in both the 16 and 3200-meter runs, and the 4x4 relay team finished in second place. So a lot of points stacked up. And Southeast Saline, the champions of 3A Boys State Track and Field, and our Athletes of the Week from NCKSSports.com and Cunningham Telephone and Cable. You can read much more about that at NCKSSports.com. So congratulations to the Southeast Boys Track and Field team on their accomplishments over the past week.
Yeah, no doubt. They're very impressive, and certainly Southeast has had a pretty good run in athletics the last few years, and they're going to be really, really good again. I'm sure in football, but basketball, boys basketball, they're going to be. They got everybody back from a team that finished third. So
that's my. They got people graduating, and I got a cousin that is there that's pretty athletic and good at a lot of stuff, and he can't even sniff varsity in any of the sports that he plays yet. So it could be a while that they could be pretty good. It sounds like.
Yeah, they're going to. Yes, absolutely. I just hope they're not very good. Say. One of my kids a senior. Just have one down year. Or we don't worry about it in regards to they're not in our same sub-state or something like that. All right. That cover everything for local?
That covers local, yeah.
All right. Well, here's good news if you're a KU men's basketball fan. As yesterday, midnight, last night, was the deadline to decide whether you stay in the NBA draft, keep your name in, and hope you get drafted, or you withdraw your name and return to school. And the Jayhawks, one of the few schools in America that didn't have anybody transfer or leave in the transfer portal, which is very odd, but great for KU. Of course, Christian Brown is going pro. He's going to be a first-round pick. But Jalen Wilson was one that people said, yeah, you know, he may go, he may stay, we don't know. They look pretty good early on in some of these events. And he announced that he is going to return to the University of Kansas. He averaged 11 points, 7 rebounds in his second full season with the Jayhawks last year. Bill Self said in a statement, "We are all very excited to hear the news from Jalen and his family that he'll be returning to school. He's gone through the process, and the process did exactly what it's intended to do. It gave him the feedback he needed to make an educated decision. We're proud of the maturity Jalen showed in making the decision and very excited to put him a position to where he can enhance his opportunities to not only play, but have a long career in the NBA. And also, as expected, Texas Tech guard Kevin McCullough, who's an outstanding defensive player, played for Texas Tech, had said a week or two ago he was going to go to Kansas if he withdrew from the NBA draft. He did withdraw his name from the draft, as expected. He averaged 10 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3 assists last year for Texas Tech. We know Texas Tech was very good last year. And Kansas defensively on paper looks to be really good defensively. Now, offensively, it's going to be interesting to see how they mesh some of the younger guys. You know, Bobby Pettiford, I would think, will have a pretty good role on this team next year. DeJuan Harris and Jalen Wilson will be the veterans, along with McCullough, who will be a new Jayhawk, but he is experienced as well. Zach Clements will have probably a bigger role. And then, of course, some of those freshmen, MJ Rice, Grady Dick, maybe others that can contribute. So it'll be interesting to see how Bill Self puts all this together when it comes to KU basketball as they try to repeat as national champions. Odds are they won't. That's pretty clear, usually, but you never know. And if you're talking about early favorites for the NCAA championship, of course, North Carolina's got all their key guys back, so that's huge. And they were just shy of winning the title this year when KU came back in the second half. But Drew Timmy yesterday announced that he's returning. Averaged 18 points a game last year for Gonzaga. He's returning, and that is a huge, huge, huge development for Gonzaga. And so people right now are saying Gonzaga and North Carolina are the favorites to be the national champions, which usually means that's a kiss of death. And Duke continues to lose about everybody from last year's team. As Trevor Keels, they thought he was a 50-50 shot that he would stay. He decided to go. And that means that Duke has an opening. And I saw Courtney Ramey, who played at Texas, is one of the candidates to transfer. He's in the transfer portal to possibly replace Keels at Duke. Duke hasn't. Don't feel sorry for Duke, by the way. If you think, oh, no, how are they going to make it without Coach K? John Shire's got an outstanding recruiting class coming into Duke, so they'll be just fine. Last night, four of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League obviously got together for an NFL passing competition. No, actually, they played golf. It's called The Match, a charity golf event that took place at the Wynn in Las Vegas. It was Aaron Rodgers coming through in the clutch. Rodgers and Brady knocks off Mahomes and Allen.
He began the day with a birdie at the first.
From about this distance.
And he can close the door here on number 12.
Oh, my.
And he just
did. Oh, my.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my.
Let's go, baby.
So I was watching the last three holes. That's when I happened to tune in. My youngest said, hey, I wonder if that golf match is still on. I'm like, sure. So we turn it on. We see the last three holes. And it is funny to watch these guys. Some of them, they hit some good shots. They don't hit some good shots. And they had mulligans. Each one had a mulligan. And so three of the four guys had their mulligan on the final hole. But it, Mahomes and Allen were down early two holes. Came back, actually were up. And then it was tied. And then the last hole, they played 12 holes. The last hole is a par three, water on the left. And Rodgers put it right on the green about 15 feet away. And Mahomes put it on the green, but was well shorty. Like, there was like a 60-foot putt. And Allen was off the green. And Allen gets up there and putts. And my oldest son happened to sit down. And he says, I think one of these guys is going to make that. I'm like, no, they're not. Allen rolls it within two revolutions of the ball going in the hole. I mean, it looked like it was going in. It was like an inch away from going in. It would have been crazy. And then Mahomes was close, but just blew it by to the right side. And then Brady missed a 15-foot putt. Barkley said, one of these guys is going to make a putt. He says, it's going to be Rodgers or Brady. And he said, Rodgers still going to make it. And they had the earpieces in, the golfers did, the quarterback. So they're hearing everything. As they're putting, they're hearing all this stuff. They're hearing Barkley go, yeah, Rodgers is going to make this. And Rodgers drilled it. Dead center, perfect putt. And so he birdied it whole by himself. And it was funny. Josh Allen said multiple times, you know, Patrick, you know, kind of carried us. And then people on Twitter is like, well, state the obvious. Of course Mahomes is going to carry you. And did you see some of the banter back and forth? Like Josh Allen had a golf ball of Brady when he, you know, was, you know, drafted the early footage without his shirt. You know, he just didn't look very good, you know, didn't look athletic. He had golf balls made up with that on there. That was pretty funny. And there was a sit down where Mahomes and Allen before the match, and they were asked, for some reason, they asked Mahomes, you know, what does Josh Allen, you know, what do you think Josh Allen fears the most, you know, or what does he not like? And Mahomes thought about it and goes, a coin toss. And Allen just hides his head like, and I was like, I thought he was going to say 13 seconds and I have the ball would have been a great answer as well. I thought that's where he was going to go. And the clip was 14 seconds. So somebody put, the only thing that made this clip better is if it was 13 seconds instead of 14 seconds. So there's some friendly banter between those guys. It was a charity event. The event raised enough money to donate 10.2 million meals for Feeding America, which has more than 200 food banks across the country. So Rodgers and Brady win on the final hole and knock off Mahomes and Allen. I mean, the guys can hit it pretty far. Rodgers has this, he lines up left and always plays a slice to the right or a pull to the right, whatever you want to call it. Not really pull, it's a slice, but it's like a left back to the right. It's just how he plays. I remember I used to do that way back when I was younger. Then I realized how to actually hold the club properly. I'm like, maybe I could help Aaron Rodgers on that one. But Rodgers came through, and Brady and Rodgers win that event. Sad news in the NFL, a couple of things. One, Marion Barber. Remember Marion Barber? Mm-hmm. He was, I mean, man, he was a bruising running back out of Minnesota. He was an outstanding running back. Played for the Cowboys. He died yesterday at the age of 38. The team said in a statement, we were heartbroken by the tragic death of Marion Barber III. Marion was an old-school, hard-nosed football player who ran with the will to win every down. He had a passion for the game and love for his coaches and teammates. Our hearts go out to Marion's family and friends during this difficult time. Frisco, Texas police found Barber dead in his apartment yesterday. The cause of death is not yet known. Marion Barber was drafted by the Cowboys in the fourth round of the 2005 NFL Draft. Spent seven seasons in NFL, six with the Cowboys from 05 to 2010, one with the Bears in 2011. He made the Pro Bowl in 2007 with the Cowboys. He finished his career with almost 5,000 rushing yards, which is a really good career in the NFL. 53 rushing touchdowns, and he also had six receiving touchdowns and 1,300 yards receiving. So he passed away yesterday, and then last week, I don't think we ever mentioned this, or it was over the weekend, Jeff Gladney is an outstanding defensive back at TCU. You probably remember him going up against K-State and KU and Oklahoma, and he was a draft pick, early draft pick. It might have been a first-round draft pick back in 2020. Anyway, he had some issues dealing with stuff, this and that, was going to have a second chance in the NFL with the Arizona Cardinals this year, and he was supposed to compete for a starting cornerback position. He was killed in a car accident at the age of 25. So a couple of really bad things happening with NFL players, one that was current and one that passes away at the age of 38. The NBA Finals begin tonight. It is Game 1. It's the Celtics and the Warriors. They meet in San Francisco. Game 2 won't be till Sunday. The Warriors are in the Finals for the sixth time last eight seasons. The Celtics for the first time since 2010 when they lost to Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. It's a fascinating matchup. And both teams, you know, Warriors are one of the highest turnover teams in regards to they turn the ball over more than pretty. I think they have the second most turnovers anybody in the league this year, and they've done some of that at the playoffs. The Celtics haven't really closed the door in some games where they look great, and then all of a sudden they hold on for dear life. The Celtics are really known more for their defense. The Warriors are known, of course, more for their splashy offense, even though the Warriors actually are the second best defensive team in the NBA, and the Celtics actually aren't very bad offensively. So there's not a major chink in the armor for either one of these teams. Game one of the finals is 8 o'clock tonight on ABC. Steve Kerr on the Celtics.
What I see in Boston is a great defensive team, super athletic, a team that has continuity, been in the playoffs year after year with the same core. So it's a team that has worked its way to this point in a very natural organic way. You know, traditionally this is how it's supposed to work in the NBA. If you look at, you know, over the years, you know, you grow a team through the draft, you take your lumps in the playoffs, you climb up, and then you get to the finals. What I like is it's two teams that were mostly built with patience and through the draft and development, player development, and continuity. And I think that's good for the sport.
I would agree with that. You know, the Celtics have been building this for quite some time. Remember when they had a whole bunch of draft picks and Danny Ainge? It's like, man, look at these guys. I remember the Celtics actually traded down and got Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. One of the best moves in the draft that we've seen in quite some time. You know, Jaylen Brown, I had questions about him coming out of Cal. You know, he has a lot of potential, but, you know, how good is he going to be? And he has really worked hard to become a really good player. Marcus Smart has developed into a much more complete player. Robert Williams was a good draft pick, a guy out of Texas A&M that can defend the goal. You know, getting Al Horford back was a very key move. You know, where the Celtics went south, I think the Celtics would be in the NBA Finals well before this year, and they wouldn't have had to wait 12 years if they didn't try to speed up the process. What happened was they went and they got Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. And if they would have just stood pat, Terry Rozier actually played better than Irving for a good portion of that year, and then Irving was hurt in the playoffs and Rozier was really good. If the Celtics would have just not jumped the gun and went after Kyrie Irving, I think the Celtics would have been in the finals before this year, and maybe, just maybe, they would be a team we'd be talking about that's in the finals for the third time in 4 years or something like that. But they tried to speed up the process. It backfired on them, but they've regrouped, and now here they are. Ime Udoka is the new head coach for the Boston Celtics, and he talks about the importance of finals experience. The Celtics have none. Not a single player on the Celtics team has played in NBA Finals for 1 second. Not a single guy. No games of NBA Finals experience. Al Horford has been 141 playoff games, but had never made it to the NBA Finals until now, which I'm really happy for him. And the Warriors have a combined 123 games of NBA Finals experience. Here is Coach Udoka on how important that may be.
I think once you get out of the initial media circus and the intensity and how everything is much more exaggerated, obviously it's not much different when you get on the court. We have guys that are young but have been through a few Eastern Conference Finals already, and then our path this year, two game sevens and playing some high level teams and taking a tough route, I think that's prepared us more than anything. I coached in two finals my first 2 years in the league, got to a Western Conference Final as a player myself, and then we've had other coaches who have been through it and won championships as well, and so we can kind of give our advice on what's to come, but once we get out there, I think what's really been good about our group is they're not caught up in the moment.
Yeah, I don't know how important NBA Finals experience is. I think it is important maybe early in the series because the Celtics are happy to be here. They've been so close. Three of the last 5 years, Eastern Conference Finals, they finally cracked through. You can't be happy to be here because you just don't know if you're ever going to get back. You know, the Suns look like a shoo-in to get back after what happened last year, and of course, we know what happened to them. The Warriors were basically had everything rolling, and then the Cavs, who were down 3-1, came back and ruined what was seemed to be a perfect season. Then they go get Durant. They win a couple titles, but then, of course, then Durant leaves, and then they have the injuries, and Klay Thompson gets hurt, and Steph Curry breaks his hand, and next thing you know, the Warriors are one of the worst teams in the NBA. So it can happen that quickly. You can be at top of everything, and the next thing you know, you're near the bottom. The Warriors have been a perfect example of that. How important do you think NBA Finals experience is? Because I do think it's a good point that the Celtics have played two game sevens already.
Yeah.
And those are do or die games, obviously, elimination games. And the Celtics have been able to come through and win those games, one of those games on the road, the other at home. And I mean, I think that is important, whereas the Warriors have not had to deal with a game seven this year and honestly have, for the most part, been in pretty comfortable shape throughout every series, although the Grizzlies pushed them a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all that important. I think it makes a difference, I guess, who your opponent is. So that's why it comes into your mind, is the Warriors have so much of it, right? Like mm-hmm. some of the other titles that we've seen. But then I can look back and look at the Raptors, right, who had hardly any other than Kawhi Leonard and ended up beating the Warriors mm-hmm. in that series. And I know the Warriors had injuries and things like that that we're dealing. Kind of last year, I'm looking at last year's matchup, and really neither one of those teams had a lot of finals experience. So you can't really look at that series and see if it had a big factor or not. You know, the Lakers and Heat, neither one of those teams really had a lot. They were in a bubble. You know, LeBron had a lot of experience, you know, and some of the other guys had experience. But it's hard to tell because you don't see a lot of these matchups where one team just has so much more experience. And so I think you're going to find out maybe. I agree with you. I think it's more important early in the series if the Celtics aren't focused on the task at hand, mm-hmm. right? If they're not focused on, hey, this is the finals. I don't care what experience they have, what we have. We just need to come out and play basketball. And really, I think that's what it comes down to. When you have two really, really good teams, obviously, they're great teams to get to this point of the season. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's as big of a deal as the media will make it out to be. Like the national talking heads will probably talk about this a lot, right? But I'm with Ime Udoka a little bit on that. I think once the ball gets tipped off, mm-hmm. you're just playing basketball. That's not part of your thought process once you're actually out there playing. So, and you know, they've got plenty of guys with plenty of playoff experience and understand what they need to do in crunch time situations. That I don't know that the NBA Finals part of that is going to be a major part of the equation.
What do you think, Jason? Do you think experience is that big a deal?
I think if it does show up, it'll be on the benches.
You mean when the bench comes into play?
Yeah. When the situation, like when the Warriors are called on to go into the game, those guys have been there. Those guys have done it. If the Celtics have a little bit of a weird situation where one of them gets in foul trouble or something and one has to play a few extra minutes or maybe doesn't handle getting a little less time because there's no tomorrow, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum might play 44, 48 minutes in a game, and that person that usually plays those minutes doesn't get a chance. Maybe they try to, overdo it. Maybe they don't have the sense of urgency or something. But if it does show up, it'll be in the bench players. But I'm kind of with you guys. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world. But, then if the Warriors win in four, that's what we'll all say. It's like, we should have saw this coming. But, I don't think that's going to be the reason or the difference in the series, really. I think the main guys will settle in for Boston fairly quickly.
The Celtics, or the Warriors, I should say, they have a deeper bench, but it is an inexperience. They got a couple of rookies that are on that bench mm-hmm. that haven't been in this situation before. You know, Jordan Poole's not been in this situation before. You know, Andrew Wiggins has not been in a situation. You know, they talk so much about the experience, but really when you think about it, we're talking about three players. We're talking about Klay
to five finals. You're going to have a lot of games,
right? Like, I mean, that's the thing that I think is a little bit overblown here is that, well, they've got all this experience. Really, they have three players. It's Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green.
And Looney's probably and Looney's the other one that's adding a lot of games to that.
He's not there, but I don't think he's going to play a lot.
But Wiggins has no NBA Finals experience. Jordan Poole has no NBA experience. The Moody kid off the bench has none. Gary Payton Jr., they might get back. He has no NBA Finals experience. There's a lot of guys on the Warriors that don't have NBA Finals. And Andre Iguodala has a ton, and he might not even play in this series. That adds to the 123 games. That's the fourth guy.
Yeah.
So, that it is a little bit misleading. It's not like the starting five for the Warriors are just loaded with experience in the NBA Finals. That's not true. Gary Payton Jr., this is a very interesting thing. I've forgotten about him because, remember, he was a victim of a flagrant foul by Dylan Brooks in the Grizzlies series. He's an outstanding defensive player. Outstanding defensive player. And there's talk that he might be able to play in the series. I don't know if he's going to play, tonight or if he's going to play game two or game three. I don't know if he's going to play at all, but there's talk that he might be able to go in the series. That is important to note because the Celtics, we know how good defensively they are. Gary Payton Jr. gives you length and athleticism. He might be the guy. We talk about the X factor. We were talking the other day. Well, who guards who? Like, if Draymond is going to not guard, if you want him to stay out of foul trouble, and he's one of the best defense players in the league. So Wiggins is going to be on either Tatum or Brown. Who's on the other guy? We're like, well, maybe Klay Thompson. Well, Klay would be giving up some size there. You have Gary Payton Jr. available. Now you do have that defender to where you could guard against Tatum and Brown and have matchups defensively. So Gary Payton Jr., whether or not he plays in the series, that is something to keep an eye on. He is an outstanding defensive player. He's not a horrible offensive player either. Right, and Andre Iguodala, we know he's a very good defender. Of course, he's up there in age, but as of let's see here, 50 minutes ago, Gary Payton Jr., Otto Porter Jr., who's been hampered with a foot injury, and Gary Payton II. So Iguodala, Payton, and Porter, and they're all good defensive players. All three are questionable going into tonight's game one. So those are three very important defensive players, and if the Warriors could get two of those three back, suddenly you say, you know what? Maybe they can match up a little better against the Celtics. But I think when you look at any series, but I think in particular the NBA Finals, the best game to get when you are the underdog, which, you know, some people have the Celtics winning this thing, and then there are others that have the Warriors winning it. I think to the lay basketball fan, the Warriors are the favorite and the Celtics are the underdog. And and the Warriors have home court advantage, obviously, with game one tonight at Golden State. The best game to get when you're the underdog, the best game to grab is game one. That is the one to grab. The Warriors have been off for a while. They had a longer break. The Celtics should have been recovered. They've had, you know, three full days, basically, to recover from their win on Sunday. And the other thing, too, that we should point out, we talk about the bench. The Warriors, I think, have an advantage with their bench play. However, that can be easily negated, and here's how. As Jason just put it, you know, if you don't play game two to Sunday, the NBA Finals is drug out even more. And the reason they do that is to make sure that the best players recuperate so you have good product to throw out there to people. And you're trying to find the primetime TV slots, too. So they're going to play tonight, and they're going to have Friday and Saturday off and then recuperate and be ready to go for Sunday night in game two at Golden State. That does negate the bench a little bit, because now if you are Ime Udoka, or even Steve Kerr for that matter, but you know, Tatum is only 24. Brown, I think, is 25. You might say, you know what? I'm shortening my bench, and I'm going to let these guys go 40, 44 minutes instead of 35, 36. And the Warriors are a little bit of the older team. Curry's older. Thompson's older. Green is a little older than you think. And that could be a factor. Like, the Warriors got the better bench. Yeah, but are the Warriors still going to utilize it as much as they have when there's more time off between games? They very well might. The Celtics already have shortened it to about seven players here towards the end when they're elimination games. And you saw Jimmy Butler play all 48 for the Heat in the elimination game and like 42 in game six. You have more time to recuperate between games to where that bench thing might not be as big a deal as people think, because especially when you got young stars like Tatum and Brown. They're not 30 and 31. They're 24 and 25.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and we've seen that happen in the past in the NBA Finals, where some of the older guys can play longer because they know they get more rest, right? That's just part of it, and that's the advantage of getting this far into the season, is that you have that built in, and you have more flexibility with what you can do with some of the guys that are the more veteran, the older guys, and yeah, I mean, if you need to use that bench, they're all fresh too, and so. I think it's a win-win. If you get in a tough situation, you can figure out ways to navigate through that without having to worry about, who's going to be tired next game.
The Warriors are the favorite to win it. They are a favorite to win tonight, obviously, game one at home. And I'm pulling it up here. They're 3.5-point favorites tonight. And they are the favorite in Vegas to win the finals as well. So the Celtics are the underdog. But I see a lot of people pick the Celtics to win this series. So it's not as clear-cut as some people think. And if the Celtics do win this series, let's not sit here and act like it's one of the greatest upsets in NBA history. It's not. The Celtics are really good. The Celtics won two less games than the Warriors this year, and that's after the Celtics started 23-25. So to me, this is a pretty even series. It really is. I would be very surprised if it goes 4 or 5. I think it's going at least 6. So. But yeah. I hope so. I want to see 7. But
I'm thinking like 60-40 Warriors is in my head. You know, just not 80-20 or 70-30, but like 60-40, like Warriors probably win. If the Celtics win, am I going to be shocked? No. A little surprised. Maybe a little, but not really that much.
My oldest son said there's something on, you know, some dumb thing on ESPN app or whatever it was, that 86% 86% Celtics or something. And I'm like, he's like, if anything, it should be the Warriors 86%. I said, I wouldn't go that far with the Warriors either.
that.
And he goes, 70-30 at best. I go 60-40. And then Jason just said 60-40. Mm-hmm. I said, I think I'd say Warriors 60-40, maybe 55-45. And I think this series could go either way, to be quite frank with you. I do worry, too, though, if you're a Celtics, if it goes seven, you have the experience of playing two game sevens, but you're also playing with fire for the third time of the game seven. Yeah. And with the Celtics played two more games than the Warriors in the playoffs. Will that maybe catch up to the Celtics having to play another long series?
Here's this ESPN's Basketball Power Index. And this is just for tonight.
These things are so much fun.
Yeah. But this is 60-40 for Boston tonight. So I don't. Yeah.
Well, how do they come up with
this? I don't know.
These people that, like, the probability of winning, you know, like even before the game, the Royals, the Royals and the Astros. Astros have a 73.4% probability rate of winning. That's bull honky.
Yeah.
They have a 99.538% chance of winning.
Golden State at 3.5 is kind of a 77%. Like, that's kind of.
Yeah.
Good luck figuring that out.
Yeah, I'm just not going to bet on it and not worry about it.
That win probability is my favorite thing in the world. Like, that you get to the end of the game and some team doesn't have real good chance, and then they come back and win, right? Like, your win probability was 3%. Well, it's 100% now because they just came back and won. I don't care what it was during the game.
We went to the Royals when they're up 6-0 at the end of seven innings. Do you know what the Royals' win probability was after the end of seven innings?
Yeah.
It had been like 97 or 98.
98.3.
Yeah, I was like, it had to be 97 or 98, I would think.
So the Twins had a 1.7% win probability rate, and they scored seven next two innings and won the game. Thus, it's 100%. So I don't care about the probability rate. Yeah. The probability rate means nothing to me.
We like to the people will throw them graphs out, like, in-game, how it changed. And I'm like, I don't really care. Like,
I don't either.
Win probability is... doesn't mean anything in game for me.
No, I hear you. I really, really try not to watch ESPN very much. The only thing I like on ESPN is when Tim Legler talks basketball, I think he's really good. And Scott Van Pelt, I think, is good. Those two together are really good when they do banter about breaking down NBA finals. And then as soon as they say more from Stephen A. Smith, I turn the channel. And here's why. So I happened to stumble upon this during the Heat-Celtics series. And I kind of accidentally stumbled upon it. I was kind of watching but not watching, and Scott Van Pelt was on. And it went to Stephen A. Smith, and he talked about Tyler Hero's hamstring. It was a groin injury. He didn't even have the injury correct, okay? And it's in the injury report, and it's all you got to do is Google it within 1 second, and it says groin, not hamstring. So this guy getting paid millions of dollars, they don't even know the players he's covering and what kind of injury they have. He didn't know about Desmond Bane having a back injury, ripped the guy, and Wilbon says, well, he's been playing with a really bad back injury. Oh, I didn't know that. How do you not know that? You're covering the NBA playoffs. I'll give you another one why I don't watch ESPN hardly anymore. Because there's so many things they just spew out there that's absolutely inaccurate. So Sam Acho, I don't know how this guy got a job. Anyway, he's on there, and he says the other day, and I happened to stumble upon it. I was flipping through channels, and I happened to stumble upon it. And they were talking about, you know, who's the favorite to win the AFC. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch this for a second because I'm sure they're going to pick the Bengals or the Bills or something. You know, they're not going to give the Chiefs any credit. The Chiefs are the eighth best team in the AFC, some kind of crap like that. And I was pleasantly surprised. He goes, well, the Chiefs are the team. He goes, you know, they've won the four straight AFC title game. Like, this guy knows what he's talking about. So he's going, you know, Chiefs won four. He goes, and Patrick Mahomes, you know, he's led the Chiefs to six straight division titles. And I just slapped myself in the head and I said, you just lost all your credibility. You were doing so fine if you would have quit talking.
Close.
He's only been a starter in the league for 4 years. I did not know that Patrick Mahomes, while he played at Texas Tech his last year, led the Chiefs to the first of their six straight division titles. Did you know that, Dusty? I did not know that Patrick Mahomes, playing one game his rookie year against the Broncos, counts as leading the Chiefs to a division title. I did not know that you could win six division titles, but only playing in four of those 6 years and technically, you're a rookie in the first year. I did not know that. Patrick Mahomes is an amazing dude. I had no idea that he could win six division titles in 4 years as a starter. That seems impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's what he said. And I'm like, dude, you, this is why national people, you just don't want to listen to them when they talk about your players. You
the
know?
Win probability wouldn't be good on that.
No, not at all. No. Not at all. All right, CBS Sports guy talking about how Bobby Witt Jr., there's nobody to block him at shortstop. And this year, who was the starting day shortstop? The guy I told the guy about, Mondesi. And now he got hurt again, so Witt is the shortstop. But he was blocked. He was Mondesi didn't get moved to the outfield. Mondesi was a shortstop. That guy didn't know what he was talking about. You know, he might know about New York teams, but he don't know jack squat about the teams in this area. There's no doubt. And so I just sit here and I shake my head and I said, how many people watch that and then go out and go, yeah, Mahomes has won six straight division titles? Because that's misinformation. That's what really scares me with anything on TV anymore. It's like, guys, do you even fact check at all?
Yeah.
Well, Tyler Herro's hamstring is really... Did you hear about Herro's hamstring? I mean, that is really giving him problems. He can't play. Yeah, you're an idiot. It's a groin, okay? Yeah. Completely different injury, all right? A groin and a hamstring, they are different. You know why I know that? Because they're named two different things. If they're the same thing, they'd be the same thing. I mean, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I can at least figure that out. And these guys are getting paid millions of dollars to get these things wrong.
Yeah, my favorite Stephen A. one was, and I don't watch it either.
He named the Chiefs. One year he named the Chiefs, and he named two players on the team he said had to get better. They weren't even on the team anymore.
They weren't on the
He mentioned Derek Johnson one year.
Yeah, it's the Chiefs one, too, for this, but it's the other team they were playing. I remember, I saw this on Twitter. I don't watch this stuff live, but somebody had shared this. They were breaking down Chiefs-Chargers. It was 2018.
Oh, yes,
and he said
that.
Something about they're going to have difficulty covering Hunter Henry.
He's out for the season.
And Hunter Henry played zero games in 2018. Right. Like, he was not even playing. And the guy over on the other split screen was just looking like, what?
Yeah.
What is he talking? Hunter Henry's not playing. You could tell there's a look in his eyes. This guy doesn't even know what he's talking about right now.
Yeah, he said something like, Derek Johnson's got to play better. And he mentioned two or three Chiefs guys. They weren't even on the roster anymore. They were done. We weren't even playing football. I was like, dude, do you know anything about what you're talking about? Can I please have your job? Because I'll at least get that part right.
Yeah.
And I know it's not easy to cover every single team and all the sports, but when you're in the NBA playoffs and you're talking about a series, you probably should know the guy has a back injury.
If you're going to talk on that platform, you got to know what you're talking about. And if you don't know, just don't say anything about it. Just say, hey, I know he's probably directed what to talk about.
Right.
But it's just like, just be like, yeah, I don't know enough to talk about that today.
Yeah.
Give me some pointers here so I don't look like a fool.
Or just be generic and say Tyler Herro's injury.
Injury, yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He didn't have to get specific. Right. He makes himself look sillier than he is. Yeah. But Samuel Acho, hey, Mahomes has led him to six straight division titles. Like, that is physically – I thought that was impossible because he hadn't been in the league for 6 years, but good to know. By the way, God, I love Mahomes with the swing juice yesterday. He had a Coors Light. I'm like, that's what he's got is a Coors Light? But okay. And
that's who's paying him, so that's what he's drinking. Yeah. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, they said that just that deal with the Coors Light can and taking a swig and called it the swing juice. And he says it helps him, which I've golfed, and it does help you until the point of no return. Same thing with bowling and billiards, okay? There's a point of no return, and he even mentioned that last night when they were talking to him with the earpiece. And by the way, Mahomes almost ran into another golf cart. They all had their individual golf carts, and on the last hole when they were going up to the next green, he almost, like, hit a worker that was in a golf cart. I'm like, why did they all have to have the individual carts? Like, why can't they sit next to each other? What, are they going to give each other cooties or something? What's going on here? It's weird. Like, they each got their own individual golf cart. You know, and so I'm like, okay, but Mahomes, they said that little bit with the Coors Light can was $111,000 worth of advertising for Coors Light, which I don't know how they come up with that number. You know what's a cool number? 111,000. They just pull stuff out of you know what. All right, the NHL playoffs last night, the Rangers win game one.
Topple cockle. Right out in front, and Hedl scores again.
I like that play-by-play call. I like that. Sean McDonough's done a nice job on hockey. He's good.
Yeah.
Very good. I love that energy. So the Rangers, they win last night 6-2. They're up 1-0 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Lightning trying to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals for the third year in a row and try to win it for the third year in a row. And the Avs tonight at Western Conference Finals in Denver, they're up 1-0. They'll try to go up 2-0 on the Oilers. Game 2 at 7 o'clock in Denver tonight on TNT. It is time... Well, we have the Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot. It's now time for the French Open update with Dusty. When Jason and I stare at Dusty, look into his eyes, and see if he can pronounce these names correctly or spell them correctly.
Oh,
Spelling, I have to look at something, but a lot of the names I can pronounce.
Good.
Iga Świątek. If you looked at that name, it wouldn't be Świątek. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Okay.
She's the number one seed. She won straight sets over 11-seeded American Jessica Pegula yesterday, and Daria Kasatkina also advanced to the semis. Men's side, Marin Cilic beat number 7, Andrei Rublev. Cilic, a 20 seed, and 8 seed Casper Ruud also moved on to the semis. So those are the winners yesterday. Semis start today in the women's side. So it's Świątek against Kasatkina, and then Coco Gauff faces Martina Trevisan from, I believe, Italy.
I'm just going to say it. I never heard of the person that's the number one seed of this tournament. I've never heard of this.
You know how
player.
She got there, right? Because she was number two and Ash Barty retired. Okay. And so she was default given the number one ranking in the world.
I didn't
and
even
now the
know
number
she
one
existed,
seed everywhere.
Yeah. Let alone be two, then one.
She won a major like a couple years ago when she got on the map.
Naomi Osaka, as you mentioned, got beat in the first round. Will she ever get back to where she was?
So.
I think she's mentally shot.
She's just too far gone, and mm-hmm. I don't think that her passion is in the game anymore,
not
to be
either.
Completely honest with you. And I don't think that she cares a whole lot about that. I think she cares mm-hmm. more about her mental health and everything else that's going on. I don't think that tennis is the thing that is mm-hmm. on the forefront of her mind and probably won't ever be again.
It's unfortunate because she had a chance to really
she was so dominant
great career.
For a stretch. I mean, just nobody could touch her.
No doubt about it. Very short-lived, though. And then what's the deal with the Williams sisters? They're not retired. Are they just not playing in the French Open and saving themselves for the regular hard court?
I don't know mm-hmm. half the time what they're doing.
Right. Because Serena's had some
chances.
Sometimes
it's injuries. Sometimes it's just taking a break, and I think that's probably where they're at right now.
Yeah, Serena's had some chances to, you know, tie the record, right? Or break the record, tie the record for majors.
She doesn't have it yet. I think it's 23.
Short.
I think it's either 22 or 23, but the record's 24.
Okay. So, I was going to say, it seems like she's had, what, 3 or 4 chances to be in finals of majors? And
it might actually be 22 still. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Let me see if I can find this here. How many Grand Slams? She's got 23 Grand Slams.
She's a
Margaret Court's 24. So,
Margaret
right.
Court at 24.
You're right. So she's won, and I don't think she's going to get it. No, she's 40 now. She had some opportunities, and every time she gets to the final, she loses to a younger person like Naomi Osaka or somebody else. And
Sloan, 1 year.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to happen. Unfortunately, she was so close, but oh well. Maybe that's what she gets for berating officials at DS.
I don't lose sleep about it.
I don't either.
Sure. Never been a real big Serena Williams fan.
I just don't feel
respect
like
what she can do on the
absolutely.
Court as a player.
Love her game.
But as a competitor in person and things like that, there's things that I'm just I don't ride with that.
This might be unfair. This may be very, very unfair because we've never met, none of us have met Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. We don't know what she's like. She might be the nicest person in the world. She might be the worst person in the world. But based on what we see on TV and then when she does interviews after and then I see what she does on the court, and granted, don't get me wrong, I know there is a switch. There are athletes that are absolutely just unbelievable, the meanest guys on the football field, that are nicest guys off the field. I get all that. But the thing that I always think of whenever Serena Williams, and I wasn't surprised the way she acted when Naomi Osaka took away all her glory by being the way she was and acted like a spoiled brat and all mad about everything at that U.S. Open when she knew she was getting her butt kicked, is I've always felt like Serena Williams. I like Venus way better than Serena.
Oh, yeah.
I think Venus is flat out a nice, and once again, I haven't met him, unfair pride to say this, but this is just me, and I'll see if you agree. When I see Serena talk after a match or even in other situations, I think she's fake.
Absolutely.
I just immediately the first word that comes to my mind is fake and fraud in regards to acting like she's such the sweetest person in the world and being a nice mentor for people. And I'm like, I don't buy it. I think it's complete garbage. But that's just me.
Yeah, just tone of voice and things like that when she's doing those things. Mm-hmm. It's like, sometimes it almost feels like she's talking down to the to the person that's interviewing her too,
mm-hmm.
and the same conversation style is basically mm-hmm. what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, after a match, it's kind of tough because again you're hitting that switch real fast because you got to go on an on-court interview on the majors,
right?
But even in the press conferences, I think that fakiness is actually even turned up a little bit
more.
I agree with you. That's not a word, but I made it up, fakiness.
I like it. I'm going to use it.
Yeah, I agree with that. But mm-hmm. you know, if she was a person that only had one of these instances, and, and you know, I'd be like, yeah, she probably just, it probably got away from her. But, yeah, it's nothing that I'm losing sleep over. She doesn't break the record just because I'm just like.
Well, she's not going to break it. She'd be lucky to tie it.
Or tie it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. All right, it is June the 2nd, NBA Finals, Game 1 tonight. Eight-man All-Star games next Saturday, believe it or not. We'll have complete coverage throughout next week and reports from practices. We go to eightmanallstars.com. We've got the records and stats from previous years. And you can get everything you need for eight-man All-Star football games. Eightmanallstars.com. We'll have more information eventually posted at ncksports.com. As next week is eight-man All-Star game week. The 80 best players in the state of Kansas come to Beloit to play football.